Good morning. May it please the court, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, and Justice Ridgely, I'm Natalie Haskins on behalf of Appellant Evan Brown. Mr. Brown waived his trial rights and pled to the charges of robbery in the first degree, conspiracy in the second degree, in the family court before Chief Judge Chanley Kuhn on December 16, 2010. For that charge, he was sentenced to level 5 indefinite commitment, which was suspended for level 4 Glen Mills School for Boys for 12 months, followed by aftercare under Department of Youth Rehabilitative Services for 90 days with an ankle monitor, and then to be followed by 12 months of adult probation. Mr. Brown was 17 years old at the time he entered that plea agreement. Well-established Delaware law provides for distinct treatment for juveniles versus adult offenders. Family court proceedings are civil in nature and conducted in the best interest of and not against a child. Because Mr. Brown was 17 years old at the time he was sentenced, all of his proceedings should be viewed in the best interest of and not against him.
And that's even when he becomes an adult?
Yes, Your Honor. At the time he entered the plea agreement, he was well under 18 years old.
Okay, but time marches on and he eventually becomes an adult. So can he ever be treated as an adult by the family court when they retain jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor. I would believe under extended jurisdiction statute 928F, it calls for a situation when if you're 17 years old on extended jurisdiction and you turn 18 years old and you commit a new offense, that could be a criminal contempt or a violation of probation. Under a criminal contempt, it's an actual criminal charge as an adult, and at that time he could be placed on adult probation or put in an adult facility. That did not happen here. Mr. Brown was 17 and then sentenced to adult probation immediately without seeing if he was going to be successful on extended jurisdiction.
So at the time that he became an adult, he had not in any way violated the conditions of supervision?
No, Your Honor. Currently, Mr. Brown is still at Glen Mills School, set to be released January 11, 2012. Currently, there are no pending violations of probations or criminal contempts against him. So when he exits in January, the way the court order reads, he would go on youth probation for 90 days with an ankle monitor, and then go to adult probation for 12 months with no triggering event necessitating Department of Corrections to step in.
How long can someone stay at Glen Mills?
I believe in Pennsylvania they can be there until 19 years old.
Okay. And when will he be 19?
In June of 2012. But currently he's set to leave in January.
What are the actual consequences to him that cause you to characterize this as an event that's against his interest?
Well, Your Honor, typically, if you're, like currently, when he exits Glen Mills, if he were to get into more trouble, and he's still subject to Judge Kuhn's jurisdiction, mm-hmm. she could bring him back in, and a violation could be filed, or a criminal contempt under mm-hmm. Del Code 1271. And at that time, it would be an actual criminal charge with a trial where he could hear the allegations against him, rebut them, and the trier of fact would decide if he was guilty. By putting him on adult probation, it's like skipping that whole process and not giving him a chance to be successful on juvenile probation and taking advantage of all the things he's learned at Glen Mills. Also, he would have an adult probation officer, which is very different than a juvenile probation officer, as they're not trained to deal with specific rehabilitative efforts that he's learned thus far as a juvenile.
So it's the nature of the supervision that's not in his best interest?
Yes, Your Honor. Adult probation is much more strict than juvenile probation, in my experience, with juveniles.
And just so I'm clear, what you're asking for in the way of relief is to have him resentenced, if you will, so that the last part of the sentence is for 12 months of juvenile probation?
Yes, Your Honor. There's many cases I've been a part of where juveniles are not put on adult probation.
And was that request made to the court before you appealed?
No, Your Honor. At the time during the sentencing, because it was a sentence.
No, I understand that the sentence went forward and nobody said anything, but after the sentence was entered, there was no effort to get the court, the trial court, to change its sentence?
Well, Your Honor, after talking with some of my colleagues, we discovered that Judge Kuhn wrote an opinion in Daquan Christie case in which she reasoned that 928 gave the court authority to do exactly what she did do. And based on some off-the-record conversations, there was no indication that she was going to back away from that position in that order.
Well, okay, then that leads to another question. Are you asking us to rule as a matter of law that a juvenile cannot be sentenced to adult probation unless you've gone through the process of having the juvenile treated as an adult for all purposes?
Yes, Your Honor, and to interpret 928 and what its powers actually allow a court to do. There are references to adult facilities, and DOC becomes involved in placement of juveniles, but I believe that the court in Christie expanded that to probation. So I'm asking for an interpretation of 928 and whether it allows for a court to, for a family court to put a juvenile on adult probation immediately.
Okay, I have one more question. There is a proceeding whereby a juvenile can be tried as an adult, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I gather that would this crime make, and this person's age make him eligible to have been subjected to that?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Brown had no prior felonies. The weapon that was used was a BB gun, so it was not a firearm. Therefore, under 1010, it was not transferable by way of a preliminary hearing. The state could have moved for an amenability hearing, which they did not do.
Okay, but let's say the state moves for an amenability hearing. Yeah. Could he have been found to be a person who should be tried as an adult?
I believe the state would have lost that because
okay,
of his lack of record.
But it's all right. So it's legally possible.
Yes,
what,
Your Honor.
What I'm trying to get at is why is there a problem with treating the person as a juvenile during the period of time that the person is a juvenile, but since the sentence extends beyond that time, saying, okay, for probation, by which time you will be an adult, you're going to be subjected to adult probation. Why can't you kind of split it up that way?
Your Honor, I would argue that the extended jurisdiction statute was created for the situation where a juvenile, their charges fit squarely within family court, but the court wants to still maintain some supervision over them. So it's kind of, in this scenario, it's really confusing because for 90 days, YRS is going to supervise him and then switches to adult probation. So the court felt YRS could supervise him just fine for 90 days and then wants adult probation to step in. I would say if the crime is that severe, the state could have moved for an amenability hearing and subjected him to superior court sanctions. The prosecutor during the plea agreement indicated that there was no way he could get it to superior court, and I believe he recognized he would have lost an amenability hearing with this case. So I would say the whole purpose of the extended jurisdiction statute is to cover a case like this.
Well, if I understand your position correct, regardless of what is the better policy, whether it's to have the Department of Corrections decide whether someone moves from juvenile probation or youth probation to adult probation, or whether it's the judge who's in the better position to decide whether there's going to be this transition as soon as the juvenile sentenced as a juvenile becomes an adult, your position, as I understand it, is the statute simply does not authorize the family court judge to craft the sentence that she crafted in this situation.
Yes, Your Honor. That is what the position would be.
And if the policy should be different, then it's up to the legislature to change it. Is that your position?
Or to clarify it, Your Honor. I believe what Judge Kidd...
Well, usually what happens here is if we clarify it,
yes.
And the General Assembly doesn't like the way we've clarified it, it results in a change in the legislation. And we have no problem with that. I mean, that's the way the system should work. I'm just trying to get a sense of, are we talking about the right policy here, the perfect storm, or are we talking about this is basically a question of whether the judge has the authority to do what she did or not, and under the statute, your position is she doesn't have the authority.
Yes, Your Honor. Under the statute that was cited in the opinion, the authority does not exist.
Okay, and that's what I wanted to get clear in my mind.
Yes, Your Honor.
I would like to give you the opportunity to comment, and I'll ask Mr. Williams as well, to comment on a maxim of statutory construction. I'm going to use the Latin phrase because that's how it's identified. I'll translate it to English for the record and then ask you to comment. There's a statutory construction maximum, expressio unius est exclusio alterius, which means the inclusion of one is the exclusion of others. Do you have a position whether that applies in construing Section 928, where the General Assembly has delineated two specific situations where the family court may impose adult sanctions? Does that lead to an inference that the legislature intended that the family court lacks authority in all other situations to impose adult probation?
Your Honor, I would argue that 928 does allow the family court some authority in limited circumstances to place a juvenile who has turned 18 in an adult facility.
I understand that. My question is, does the fact that the legislature said these are the two instances where the family court can do this create an inference that the General Assembly intended that in no other instance may the family court do this?
Well, the fact that they delineated two situations would indicate they wanted it limited to those two.
Okay.
And not to allow the inference for others. And, Your Honor, we mentioned a little bit about the policy argument. Family court, the basic tenets of a family court is to rehabilitate a juvenile, which is different than the Sentec guidelines, which ranks rehabilitation as the lowest priority. So, therefore, as a policy matter, I would argue that Mr. Brown should get the benefit of fully maximizing the rehabilitative efforts he has learned thus far. And to do otherwise would almost be to punish him for doing well for 12 months in a juvenile facility, to come out and say, okay, you did really well, now we're going to give you adult probation and subject you to serious adult sanctions without any kind of triggering event or new crime on your part.
But you recognize that the policy of the state of Delaware is set by the General Assembly, not us.
Yes, Your Honor, it was just a point to maybe ponder. And, Your Honor, in the state's brief, it recognizes a situation that was not described in the opening brief. The state's brief makes references to adult probation violators. Mr. Brown was not an adult at the time, and he did not violate any probation. So all the situations argued in the state's reply brief really don't apply to Mr. Brown's situation because he was 17 years old. So he was not an adult probation violator at the time. Your Honor, because Mr. Brown has done well thus far, we would ask he just be granted the benefit of seeing how he's going to do on juvenile probation, and there's a lot of mechanism that the court can use if he gets out of line, such as VOP and criminal contempt, to hold him accountable. At this time, he's held accountable for doing well, and he has to go to adult probation, which I believe is inherently unfair and in contravention of extended jurisdiction statute.
Well, I'm a few years away from this, so help me understand. What would happen if he does not do well next week and he violates the supervision he's under right now? What would be the consequence to him, or what could be the consequence?
Well, Your Honor, one of the consequences is he could be brought back, discharged from Glen Mills program, but brought back to family court. And because he's still 18, Judge Kuhn could put him in Ferris School for Boys, which is a level 5 facility.
You said because he's still 18?
Yes, he's 18 and 5 months.
And he's not. And when you say because he's still 18, I'm trying to get straight in my mind. 18 is adulthood, but 19 is the
right,
age we're dealing with.
DYRS does not supervise juveniles or does not like to supervise them after 19 years old.
Okay.
So he could be brought back to Delaware and put in Ferris, which is a locked facility, the maximum penalty you can face as a juvenile. In this context, he was sentenced to level 4, which is akin to quasi-incarceration as an adult. So the court thought he was okay to go to level 4, which is not the maximum, but he could face that if he were to mess up at Glen Mills.
But it would be in a juvenile detention facility. He wouldn't go to the adult correction facility.
That would be up to whether Judge Kuhn wants to hold him where she wants to hold him. There are cases when if you are 18, even if you're going to go to Ferris, you can be held at an adult correction facility. I've not seen the court do that very often because if they're juveniles and they're going to go to Ferris, she likes them to not be mixed with the adult population.
Okay.
But also, they could file a criminal contempt against them as well.
Okay. Thank you. Did you want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely, may it please the court. I'll attempt to address Justice Ridgely's question first about expressio unius et exclusio ulterioris. My understanding of that is that if there's an expression of certain items in a statute or provision, the assumption is that by omitting other items that would normally be on such a list, the intent of the drafter is to exclude those items. I don't think in Section 928 of Title 10 that we're dealing with here, the jurisdictional provision for the applicable to the Delaware Family Court, that would apply. There are some circumstances that are addressed in that statute, but I don't think the intent was ever that 928 is to cover all circumstances. For example, there's other provisions in Section 1000 that also apply. One of those has to deal with how you get juveniles into the Superior Court adult system for certain felonies. In this particular case, Evan Brown was not subject to that other statutory provision that would have automatically transferred his first-degree robbery, a serious felony offense, to Superior Court because he did not have one of the triggering elements. That is, he did not have a prior juvenile felony conviction. His only prior acquaintanceship with a family court had been a 2009 conviction for underage consumption of alcohol, and the prosecutor, I think, indicated at sentencing that he had received simply a fine for that. So he did not have the triggering event that otherwise would have placed him in the Superior Court jurisdiction, and even though he was 17 and a half because of the nature of the offense of first-degree robbery charge in this case, to which he did plead guilty.
If you had wanted to, wasn't there a basis to get him in Superior Court because of the weapon in this case?
I think so, although the prosecutor, his comments were that the weapon itself was a BB gun. It was a CO2, carbon dioxide, powered charge, and the prosecutor made a statement that I wasn't sure exactly how to interpret at the sentencing colloquy, that he was doing some investigation about that because he said that because it was not an old-fashioned BB gun that you use a pump-action thing, that it had this CO2 charge, that increased the velocity of the, the BB that's being discharged. And because of that, it had the capacity, or the prosecutor wasn't sure, but he thought it might have the capacity to inflict serious bodily harm. And because of that, that might actually qualify as a deadly weapon. But he wasn't firm about that. So I think that was the difficulty with trying to get it into Superior Court.
I guess I'm not understanding, because one of the charges was robbery. Right?
Yes.
And displaying what appears to the victim to be a deadly weapon.
Yes.
Isn't that a basis to get this juvenile into Superior Court if the state chose to do that?
Well, I don't know. I think you actually have to have a deadly weapon if that's going to be your only basis.
We have case law that says the deadly weapon doesn't even have to be operable in order to, no pun intended, trigger the amenability here?
Yes, I think that's true.
How do you rationalize that a CO2-powered pellet, which could clearly kill somebody, at least in my experience, I've killed anyone, but I know the weapon. I know the weapon, and then to have the law say that an inoperative .22 caliber rifle is a deadly weapon for the same purpose, even if it can't even be put into action, that doesn't make any sense. What I would like you to do is suggest to me why this does not appear like a situation where the family court judge, frustrated that there was no amenability hearing, but who believed that maybe there should have been because of the nature of this crime, this individual should be treated like an adult, skipped a step and put him on adult probation because that was her view, that a step that should have been taken in an amenability hearing wasn't taken. Why should I, tell me why I should not think that way, that that just doesn't have any merit to it.
Well, I don't know if it doesn't have any merit to it, but the judge doesn't say that during the colloquy about
the amenability. Well, nor would I if I were in her position, but the same on.
So we would have to infer that, but I think given the prosecutor's other comments about whether it was or wasn't a deadly weapon, I mean, he does say, you know, it looks like a real gun, and that's all that's important in at least my experience in the Superior Court, is all you have to do is display something that appears to be a deadly weapon.
Well, let me interrupt because I'm getting very confused here. My understanding is that a juvenile who commits a serious offense can be subjected to an amenability hearing to be tried as an adult, right?
Correct.
And that's within the discretion of the prosecutor, right?
Yes, I think they have to initiate. The state has to initiate.
Okay, fine. So even if we assume that this is a case that clearly could have been handled in Superior Court, that an amenability hearing would result in the court determining that the defendant or the juvenile should be tried as an adult. Let's assume that's what we have here, okay? But the prosecutor, for whatever reason, doesn't ask for that and pursues a result that involves staying in juvenile court, right?
Yes.
Am I kind of oversimplifying here, but isn't it kind of you have a mechanism for being treated as an adult under appropriate circumstances? If you're treated as an adult, you're subject to adult sanctions. If you either the court determines that you're not amenable or that the nature of the crime is such that it can't go into Superior Court, then you're a juvenile and you're subject to juvenile penalties, and that's that. You know, they don't mix. Is there something wrong about the way I'm looking at it?
No, I think that's right. And here, I don't know all of the motivations for the prosecutor not requesting an amenability hearing. I'm assuming, based on the comments the prosecutor did make, that the minimal record of this individual, he had an underage alcohol consumption, and that was it.
Right, but I don't care about any of that. I'm willing to assume that this juvenile could have been tried as an adult. He wasn't. So doesn't that end the discussion? Doesn't that then leave the family court judge with only the prerogatives of sentencing the juvenile to whatever available family court juvenile penalties there are?
Well, I don't know if it ends the discussion. I'm assuming that one of the unstated motivations for this plea agreement was the provision that Mr. Brown testify against the adult co-defendant in this case, Mr. Hudgens, who was, I believe, 32 years of age and was going to be tried in Superior Court for the first-degree robbery. And I think that may have entered into the consideration about whether there was or wasn't going to be a request for an amenability hearing. I don't know the motivations. But given all that, 928 does not have any express provision that prevents the family court judge from placing someone who turns 18 on adult probation. And that's the crux to the state's argument, is that there isn't any express prohibition against doing that. Normally, someone who's an adult is going to go to adult probation.
Let me put it this way. Could the family court impose a sentence on a juvenile that says you're going to be held in a juvenile facility until you turn 18, and then when you turn 18, you're going to get turned over to the Department of Correction and be in an adult facility for the next 6 months? Could the court do that?
Yes, I think they can. I think they have done that. in the past that someone who has been placed in Ferris until they're 18, and then on their 18th birthday, they're moved to an adult facility in the Department of Corrections jurisdiction.
And that's based upon a family court order without the person being determined to be someone who should be tried as an adult?
I don't know if it's a family court order. It may have been a superior court order that I know at least one case where that's happened, and I think it was a superior court case. I don't know a specific family court case, but I would assume that something similar could happen.
Under the state's interpretation of 928F or whatever it is, in order to have a consistent position, you would believe that it would be appropriate for a family court judge to enter the order that Justice Berger just described, to have someone be found amenable to family court and to be sentenced and supervised by juvenile corrections within the Department of Correction until they turn 18, and then order them transferred to the supervision, whether it's probation or whether it's level 5, within the adult division of the Department of Corrections. Wouldn't that be your position in order to be consistent with your interpretation of 428?
Well, I guess to be consistent, that probably would have to be the argument that the court would have inherent authority to enforce its orders, and if one of the orders is that this individual should be incarcerated, and when he moves from 17 and a half to 18, that he's then subject to adult sanctions.
I'm trying to find a principled distinction between placing someone at a level 5 juvenile facility until they're 18 and then ordering transferred to an adult level 5 correctional facility and making a distinction between that and probation under the juvenile corrections until 18 and then adult probation after age 18. There really is no principled distinction, is there?
Well, I'm not sure that there is. I mean, one of the problems is even if you stop the analysis at the probation, the adult probation, if you violate the adult probation, conceivably you could be subject to a level 5.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that in this case, though. We're not talking about someone who has failed to follow the instructions of the court after sentencing, failed to comply with the restrictions upon them. We're talking about someone who sort of prophylactically, it's been decided, won't be amenable to juvenile supervision after they reach the age of 18. They have to be transferred to adult supervision. And that's the very same person who was found amenable to family court for the purpose of a plea and sentencing. Correct?
Yes, I think so. And I think the difficulty, though, is that the judge's problem is this individual, and she envisions that he's going to be 18 before he finishes Glen Mills, because he was 17 and a half when he was sent there, and he's to be at Glen Mills for at least 12 months, so he's obviously going to be about 18 and a half when he finishes up Glen Mills.
Yeah, the suspicion I have is it's a judge who's sitting there saying, well, we never had a chance to consider, we meaning the family court, never had a chance to consider whether this person was not amenable to family court supervision. The crime that's been committed is a serious one. There's no earlier offenses that are particularly troublesome, but this is a serious crime. So what is my option here to make sure he doesn't reoffend? It is to say that once he becomes 18, he'll be supervised as an adult, because after all, he is an adult as soon as he turns 18. It looks as if it's a way or a mechanism or a methodology for avoiding the inconvenience of the failure to hold amenability hearing.
Well, I don't know if we can go that far. It's a strange sentence when you look at the total sentence, because the way the judge starts out the sentence is she says that she's going to extend the family court jurisdiction not to age 21, which she could have done under 928, but only to age 19. And one of the questions I've had about how this sentence realistically works is, okay, he's going to be at Glen Mills for 12 months. You've said that. You know he's 17 and a half now when you're sentencing him, so he's going to be at least 18 and a half when he gets out of Glen Mills. He's then going to DYRS aftercare for 90 days, that's another 3 months. So probably at most you're going to have about a three-month window until he's 19 years of age. And then the question I don't really know the answer to is whether the judge intended the adult probation to end at 19, because that's when she says the family court jurisdiction only extends to, or it's the full 12 months, because she does say 12 months, and I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, the sentence says what it says, but it seems to be that those two things are in conflict, because after 19, she said that the family court doesn't have any jurisdiction. So, you know, what do you do then?
Let me just ask a twist on that so that I understand. Would it have been permissible for the court to extend jurisdiction to age 19 and then enter the order that she did, but for the probation part of it, say you have 1 year of probation at a juvenile facility, even though the 1 year is going to take you past age 19, which is as far as I've extended our jurisdiction? Could that be done, or would that have the same basic problem to it?
Well, I think that could be done, because I know there are people who were 18, not quite 19, who were at Ferris, so I would assume that could be done.
No, what I mean is, without extending the family court's jurisdiction beyond age 19, mm-hmm. is the family court empowered to nonetheless enter an order that requires probation, whatever it requires, beyond age 19?
Well, that's what I'm not sure about. And I would think if you limit the jurisdiction to 19, that's when it ends. I mean, that's how the sentence starts. And this case is different than the other case, the Christie case, because in that case, the court extended the jurisdiction to 21 and placed the individual on adult probation after that. And that's why I'm not sure when this adult probation really ends. Does it have to run the full 12 months, or does it end when he's age 19? It would seem logical to me that if you start out with a premise that this court's jurisdiction ends at age 19, well, that's it. And he may be on this adult probation for a matter of 3 months, and that may be all that we're really talking about here.
I want to ask you about, as I understand your position, which has some logic to it, of course, that when you're an adult, you go on adult probation. But your argument is based on the fact that there's no statute that prohibits a family court judge from placing a juvenile on adult probation once the juvenile turns 18. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, an analysis of the power and authority of the family, does there have to be a statute for it to do so? Specifically, when I recall when the family court was a statutory court, there had to be a statute that basically said the court has the authority to do X if it was going to do X. Mm-hmm. Has that changed as a result of family court becoming a constitutional court, or does the constitutional provision, and I haven't looked at it recently, say that the family court has the same authority to do whatever the General Assembly provides by statute? So do we still have to look for a statute, or is there this gap where there is no statute, therefore the family court could act like the Superior Court?
I think it's
the Court of Common Pleas.
I'm sorry, I think it's the latter, that because there isn't a express statutory provision, there does not have to be one, and the court has inherent authority to enforce its orders. And if the way to enforce the order for someone who's 18 is to put them on adult probation, then the family court.
How far do we go with that? For instance, family court some time ago wanted to have jury trials. Do they now have an inherent authority because there's no statute that talks about that to conduct a jury trial?
No, I don't think they do. I mean, the Court of Common Pleas in Newcastle County for years didn't have jury trials either, because there wasn't any provision for it. And I think the family court is in that same boat. If they want to get to that, then they're going to have to go through the same process that the Newcastle County Court of Common Pleas did to have the jury trials.
Which is to have a statute.
Yes.
So yes, doesn't that suggest there needs to be a statute to put someone on adult probation, that's a juvenile, sentenced as a juvenile, in circumstances other than what are described in 928?
No, I don't think there does, because I see my time's up. Because I think the court has inherent authority to enforce its own orders. That's a hopefully an accepted judicial principle, and I think that's the reason why you don't have it. And there isn't any express prohibition in the statute that says they can't do that. And logically, if you're 18, you ought to be on adult probation.
Well, the inherent authority to enforce its own order strikes me as a dog chasing its tail. If they don't have the authority to enter the order in the first place, inherent authority to enforce it is meaningless.
Well, they have authority to put somebody on probation, and it's just a question of what type of probation it is to be. And here it's kind of a mixed bag that the individual, even though he's 18, is going to be on aftercare for 90 days under DYRS, and then after that he'll be in Department of Corrections supervision.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to try to address Justice Berger's question earlier about the situation where you can have a mixture of a juvenile sentence mixed with an adult sentence. In my experience, I've seen split pleas when a juvenile pleads to a family court charge and then a superior court charge. But in those cases, there's an agreement because the case could have gone to superior court in its entirety to kind of split the case up. But that's different than Mr. Brown's case because there was no charge giving superior court jurisdiction, like possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. Therefore, the default is an amenability, which the state did not ask for.
With Mr. Williams' usual professional candor, he struck for us the dilemma, as he expressed it, about extending the jurisdiction to the age of 19, but entering an order that might have consequences arguably after 19. What's your position on what the sentencing order actually meant in terms of the length of adult supervision?
Your Honor, the order struck me as peculiar as well because DYRS will not supervise after 19 years old. So even if Your Honors were to rule in my favor and have a juvenile probation, I'm not sure how long DYRS could supervise him. If he exits Glen Mills in January, he's 19 in June. So what happens after June? I do not know the answer to that. As well as with the Christie case, if he's on, if jurisdiction is until 21, I'm not sure who would supervise him from 19 to 21. So I'm not quite sure what the court meant with that, as well as.
Well, do you agree with Mr. Williams that the court expressed that the jurisdiction that the family court would retain would end at age 19?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree with him that there really is only 3 months adult supervision before your client reaches the age of 19?
Yes, Your Honor.
So my original question 40 minutes ago was, what's the actual consequence to your client of your plea to us today? Is it only that he should not be subject to adult probation supervision for 3 months of his life?
Well, I wasn't sure what would trump, whether the ending at 19 or the fact that it's adult probation for 12 months. So would that 12 months start January 11th when he exits Glen Mills until January 11th, 2013? I am confused as to whether it would go beyond June or not.
My guess is 3 out of the 5 of us are confused. You can pick the 3.
I mean, I would argue that Judge Kuhn could have put him on until 21, as she did in the Christie case, but she chose 19. So it's peculiar to me as well.
So I want to be clear on what your position is, that if someone is sentenced as a juvenile at age 17, mm-hmm. and is fully compliant, does not, and has this 6-month review and everything else, and everything's extended to 21, that it is YRS that does that supervision?
Well, I think it would depend on if you're in an adult facility or a juvenile facility. Because Mr. Brown is in a juvenile facility, so DYRS would supervise.
But your position is that there is no authority to place someone on adult probation except for the two circumstances in 928. So doesn't that mean that if someone had, if there's extended jurisdiction, that there is only supervision by YRS unless those two circumstances are triggered, one of those?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, the way Your Honor phrased it, yes, that would be my argument.
But it's also your experience that YRS doesn't want to supervise or maybe won't supervise after the age of 19.
Yes, Your Honor. There's times when YRS doesn't want to, but the court will try to mandate them to supervise. But from what I'm told from YRS representatives, they have a difficult time after 19 supervising. And there's also turmoil between when there's a juvenile and DOC has to step in and supervise. Like DOC and YRS don't like supervising at the same time. Because there could be times when you're on extended and you get a new felony charge at 18. So YRS tries to discharge probation so that so DOC can step in.
Does that require a court order, or can corrections handle that internally?
YRS has to come to the court and ask to discharge the juvenile.
So it does require a court order?
Yes.
Just to make sure I'm clear on your position, do you agree with the statement that the family court has no power to enter any kind of an order that would extend past the date that the juvenile becomes an adult, whether it's 18, 19, or 21?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Do you agree that the family court has no authority to enter an order that would purport to control a juvenile after the time that the family's court's jurisdiction over that juvenile ended? So here, the family court extended jurisdiction to age 19. So that would mean that the family court cannot, it has no power to enter any kind of an order, whether it's adult probation, juvenile probation, anything, after the juvenile reaches age 19. Do you agree that that
is... Yes, Your Honor, because the court can set the age, and the court set it at 19 instead of 21. Okay. And I also addressed one other... I'm sorry.
You're out of time.
I am.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.